So I've been told to keep it fairly colloquial. The core of the work, the original work that we did is analysis, is geometric PDs on a non-trivial curved background. But there's a lot of geometry and of course physics. If I'm not being too detailed on something, I'll try to let you know, and of course feel free to ask. And I'll be happy for any input on the physics because that's the part I probably the least understand. But I'll start with a little bit of background and history just to motivate things. So the story kind of begins over 100 years ago on the Eastern Front of the First World War, when in 1916, Karl Schwarzschild, German artillery officer and physicist, found the first non-trivial solution of Einstein's field equations. I'm only going to describe what's called the exterior Schwarzschild spacetime right now, which topologically is R cross, well, not really R plus, but an interval from some number to infinity across the two sphere. And the corresponding right now Lorentzian metric looks like some function h minus some function h d t squared, where the t variable is on r, plus 1 over h d r squared, where the r variable is on in this interval, plus r squared times the metric on S2, which is the round metric with Gauss curvature identically 1. So this hr is called the Schwarzschild function. It looks like this, and this r, the Schwarzschild radius, is usually written as 2m, because what it describes is a black hole, or if you don't want to use this term, and he probably didn't use it, it's a point particle of mass m, and if you want the spacetime of that far enough from the particle, then the only parameter you have here is the mass, and the mass enters the metric through this function. So the properties of this manifold are the following. It's Ricci flat. So as I said, it's solution of Einstein's equation. In fact, it's solution for the vacuum. It's non-complete, meaning that it's not a complete pseudo-Riemannian manifold. If you have an observer that starts to fall into the black hole in its time, will reach the r equals rs in finite time. But that's on the long run not going to be a problem. The other properties, two more properties that are important, is that it's static and spherically symmetric. Static means that there's a one-parameter group of isometries just replacing t with t plus capital T or something. So there's a time-like isometry for this metric. And spherical symmetry is even easier to understand. You can see that the only way that the S2 coordinates enter the metric is through the round metric on S2. So SO3 acts on this manifold via trivially on the first two factors and usually on S2, and that's an isometric action. So, so that was one of the most important, most influential, and first solutions for Einstein's equation. Fast forward a little bit to the 70s, when Hawking introduced its Vick rotated version for purposes of quantum gravity, and that's the kind of the part where you know, my physics knowledge is going to be inadequate to say more. But what he did is, first of all, the part of the Weak rotation that's the usual part is easy. He replaced the time variable with, you know, I times tau, and, you know, I'll call the new manifold X, and I'm not telling you yet what it is. The new metric will now look like, you know, basically literally the same thing, but now with a plus sign here, and I replace T with tau. But he, you know, he observed that now, if I also identify tau with tau plus 4m, and, you know, compactify the r dimension to an s1, and look at s1 times array as basically, you know, r2 minus a point, so the new manifold is now r2 cross s2, then you get a metric on this manifold, which is smooth everywhere, smoothly extends over r equals rs, and you know, the nice property, so now it's complete, but the other nice properties stay the same. So it's still Ricci flat, still, well, static in the sense of, well, imaginary time is translations in imaginary time is still a symmetry, and you know, it's still SO free invariant. But now, since I got rid of the problem at the event horizon, now I have a complete metric.
So it's static as rotation in R2?
Yes, so here the static symmetry was a subgroup of R, now it's SO2. So the, well, the identity component of the isometry group is going to be SO2 acting on R2, the usual, via the usual rotations, and SO3 still acting trivially on R2, but usually on S2. So that's now, again, the identity component. And, you know, the maybe just as a comment, that it was probably, you know, surprising or at least good to see for him that if you look at imaginary time as temperature, then the period here that you have to pick so that there's no conical singularity at the origin, if you pick another, you know, period here, you know, it's still, you know, you can still do that, but then there will be a cone angle at r equals rs. But if you pick this, then that's exactly the unique period that you have to pick so that the metric is smooth everywhere, and that, you know, coincided with the black hole temperature that he predicted via other computations. So that was.
What happens at r equals rs?
So it smoothly extends. There's seemingly a problem, right? Because you seemingly divide by zero, but that's just what they call a coordinate singularity. This r is a good parametrization of the manifold away from r equals rs, but not good at r equals rs. So what you want to do is introduce, say, rho equals root r minus rs. And that, you know, if you do that, then it, you'll see how it smoothly extends. Okay, so this is what I call the Euclidean Schwarzschild manifold. So, you know, there's one more thing that didn't make sense to mention here, but, you know, in this case you can wonder about. It's a four-manifold. And, you know, it's R2 cross S2. You can make it complex if you want to, but, you know, is the complex structure here compatible with this? And the answer is no, it is not Kähler. So, you know, the two things that at least me, mathematical gauge theorist, would wonder about here is you know, what can you say about solutions of the usual gauge theoretic equations? And the first one that, you know, one comes to one mind in for Euclidean dimensions is Young-Mills instantons for group SU2. You know, and this, you know, and if you start wondering about instantons, then the first thing that you would want, especially mainly if you are familiar with current trends and techniques, is you would want it to be a hyperkähler manifold, preferably, because then you have all the machinery of ADHM and so on. But it's not even a Kähler manifold, so that's going to be on the long run, actually on the short run, because that's the next thing I want to talk about, be one of the reasons in my mind why up till this point very little were known about instanton theory in this manifold.
Does the manifold somehow remember the number m? I mean, there's obviously a I could rescale m and sort of change of units, but is
that
there...
good question. So if you introduce, shouldn't say rho here, because I want to use the same letter rho. If you introduce this new, now this is the new variable rho, then actually there's a conformal factor that comes out, and then some metric on R2, not the flat one. Plus a metric on S2, which is still the standard one, so couple identically one, so that it looks like this, and that, you know, independent of M. So yes, the M is still a parameter, but conformally it's not. So when I look at instantons, it's not going to matter. So right. So what did we know before?
Does Euclidean Schwarzschild have other reasons which these coordinates do not see?
Say again.
So for Lorentzian Schwarzschild, we know that there are some other reasons that these coordinates do not see.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the same for Euclidean Schwarzschild?
That the coordinates don't what?
So what happens at R equals to RS is that you can continue on to some other part of the manifold,
mm-hmm.
Which these coordinates do not see.
Yeah, so there, if you want a complete manifold, you have to extend the exterior Schwarzschild. Here, the observation is you don't have to do it. Now, it's a good question whether, well, if I don't want to mod out by this tau equivalent to tau plus 4m, then can I extend it as a Riemannian manifold to something other complete? And that I don't know. It's actually a good question. I haven't thought about that,
but
because
this Euclidean Schwarzschild, you don't have to do anything.
You don't have to do that. Yeah, and in the Lorentzian case, you would not be able to, you know, do this modding out and completion thing because it's a Lorentzian metric and it would just make it impossible. But now, since it's Euclidean, it's an easier computation, and you can, in fact, do it. So that's it's going to be my motivation here. So what had been known, so what I mean is before, you know, prior to our work, is the following. So in 77, Sharp and Duff started working on, you know, instantons on this manifold. You know, the most obvious thing that you can think of is completely isometric on Zotzes. Is that what does it? Does it have a plural? The completely isometric on Zotz is what you want to look at first, right? And that's exactly what they did. So using the isometric on Zotz, they found the following. So if you write down the isometric on Zotz, what you expect, since the orbits of the isometry group are generally three-dimensional, is that, you know, your self-duality equation should reduce to an ODE. And so that is exactly what they found, is that they got an ordinary differential equation, and And they found a couple solutions. Obviously, they found the flat solution, but that's, you know. By the way, since this is a non-compact space, H4 is trivial, so any SU2 vector bundle will be trivial. And since pi1 is trivial, fundamental group is trivial, the flat connection will be unique mod gauge. So, but anyways, they found the unique flat connection. They found a family of connections that looked like, D plus AN, where, the connection one form was such that it's clearly a reducible solution. It's reduced to an abelian instanton. And these guys had Young-Mills energy. I haven't said what the Young-Mills energy is. So for me, the Young-Mills energy of an instanton is normalized by 1 over 8 pi squared times curvature norm squared dvx. The 8 pi squared is so that on closed manifolds, you would always get an integer for instantons. So, but for these guys, these reducible ones, what they found that the energy is 2n squared. The 2 comes from the fact that it's just constructed out of reducible ones, so out of abelian Maxwell solutions, and the n squared is the energy of the Maxwell solutions. But they found another solution, but just one more, that I will call index with CD for Charabdov. I mean, one should call these Charabdov too, because they were the first people to find these. But that's what's really interesting, because that's an irreducible. And energy one instanton. And still isometric. So all these solutions came out of looking for solutions of an ODE that you get from looking at the isometric ansatz. Okay, and other than this, there's really, as far as what we know about Young-Mills instantons and what I consider really qualitatively new information is probably two more things, both in, over 30 years later, in 2009. One of the things is a result of Attaché and Jardim saying that the moduli of energy, say, E instantons with fast enough curvature decay. So I won't define what it means. It basically means faster than quadratic. The definition is a little more subtle, but let's say faster than quadratic curvature decay, so fast enough decay, is a manifold. So let's call this mu e. And the dimension of this is 8e minus 6. It's, after modding out by framing. So, yes. So if you put this together with the fact that, the easily checkable fact that this is a fast enough decaying instanton, you'll see that, and has energy one, you'll see that around the Charabdov instanton, there should be a two-dimensional deformation. But they couldn't say much more than that. So, but, there should be more instantons. The story is not done. And the other thing, also in 2009, by Mosna and Tavares, what's maybe not too surprising to those who studied what's called asymptotically locally flat manifold, which the Schwarzschild manifold is also such. But if you haven't seen these sort of spaces, you might get surprised that the energy doesn't need to be an integer. So what Attashi and Jardim also did is they showed that if this condition holds for an instanton on the Euclidean Schwarzschild manifold, then the energy is quantized. But there could be instantons for which that condition doesn't hold, and then the energy doesn't need to be quantized. And in fact, Mosna and Tavares found two families of instantons. One family is, you know, energy goes from 0 to 1. And in the family 2, the energy goes between 2 and 1. So when E equals 0, you get the flat one here. When E equals 1 in the first family, this is the Charabdov in the first family. On the second family, it's something else. And when E equals 2, it's the reducible N equals 1 solution there. But, you know, for the non-integer values, it's something else that in the two families smoothly interpolates between these two guys. Well, the first family interpolates between these two, and the second one interpolates between the reducible and another irreducible energy one guy that's not the Cherubdov. And the reason I wrote it like that is that, one, there's a discontinuity. I will draw a picture later where you'll see what's going on. Okay, and that's about it. So that, I mean, about the section of what had been known before, because we don't know anymore. So we did not know any more solutions before our work. So in particular, you can see that at any energy value, at most two solutions were known. So for energy one, there were two solutions there. And for any other energy, it was either 0 or 1. So that was not too much. This is where our work starts now. Questions, by the way. So our idea was to which is not really ours. It was originally Witten's, not for this manifold, just for flat R4. But then also used by Taubes. So that was in 77. I was around 80. And then by Garcia Prada. That's one name. In the early 90s. So the idea is that if you look at SO-free invariant instantons on any four manifold, SO-free spherically symmetric, that's a better word to say, because I want an SO-free, you know, an isometric SO-free action such that the generic orbits are two-dimensional. So if you have that, if you look at spherically symmetric instantons, then what you will get, well, you expect if the orbits are two-dimensional, then and the orbit space is also two-dimensional, then you expect some you know, two-dimensional field theory to show up, and this two-dimensional field theory is in fact just vortices. So abelian vortices, basically on the orbit space. So, oh, I have that still there. So in our case, I'll make it a little more rigorous. And I write down what I mean by vortices when we get there. So lemma one, let's put it that way. If D is an SO-free invariant SU2 connection, so not necessarily an instanton yet, on X, and you know, not even the metric is not necessarily, you don't need to know about anything about the metric now, just to write down this lemma. So then, the bundle, so let's name the bundle epsilon, decomposes as some L on sigma, some line bundle on sigma, line bundle on R2, tensor, the Chern class N, and with that loss of generality, I can call it minus N, right, on S2. I'm omitting pullbacks here, right? So what this means is that I look at the line bundle, which is a pullback from R2 on X, and I also look at the line bundle, which restricted to any S2 is the Chern number minus N line bundle, and take their tensor product, and I add just the dual of this bundle. So the first statement in this lemma is that your bundle will decompose like that, which is, that's not really information, it's just topology, or the lack of it. But also D will respect that in the sense that the connection will look like some connection on sigma tensor the Chern connection on this guy, and you know, obviously the dual of this. Keep saying sigma, but if I write sigma and I forget that it means R2, then let me know. Obviously, you know, here I have to put its dual, but there could be terms in the off diagonal, and let me call those beta n and, you know, minus its dual, because, you know, here I have to put minus its dual because it's an SU2 connection. So that's the statement geometrically. But now you can say, okay, if this is how SO-free invariant connections are, oh, I didn't tell you what beta n is. Sorry. So what is beta n? If n is bigger than 1, then it's 0. If n is 1, then it has to look like some phi tensor alpha. And if n is 0, then it's, let's just say it's pulled back from R2. So, oh, and again, without loss of generality, by maybe replacing L with its dual, you can assume that n is non-negative. So if n is 0, this is the trivial bundle, so the whole setup is basically pulled back from sigma. If n is too big, then for topological reasons, there's just no SO-free invariant terms that I can put here. And when n equals 1, that's the only case when I can get something interesting there. And this phi is going to be some section of L2. And by section, I mean that it only depends on sigma variables. And alpha what does alpha has to be? Alpha has to go from O minus 1 to O 1. So it's an endomorphism, which is basically a section of O2. But the whole thing has to be a 1 form. So it's an element of that. But I also want the whole thing to be SO free invariant. And if you go through this, you realize that, you know, that's a one-dimensional space. So by, you know, in picking alpha, I don't really have any sort of freedom. The only freedom in this ansatz that I have is picking the connection on R2 and picking a section on the line bundle. So it does start to look like, you know, that my degrees of freedom are such that I have an abelian gauge theory. I'm getting there to have an abelian gauge theory on R2. Okay, questions so far? So next you would, you know, put that into the self-duality equation. So lemma two, if you look at, so if D is an instanton, oh, and by the way, I haven't written down what instanton means, but I just assume that everyone knows. Nevertheless, let's quickly write down. So if it satisfies the self-duality, its curvature is self-dual, where star x is the Hodge dual on x. And again, this is where the Riemannian metric enters the picture. Then, actually, if you know D is an instanton, if and only if, then the following equations hold. The curvature of the connection on sigma is 1 half 4 minus phi squared. The 4 is a, I know the 4 is a little bit mysterious. Oh, and let me put omega sigma here. 4 is a little mysterious. It's really, you know, a question normalization. So if I set up the problem a little bit better, you know, put a couple of convenient coefficients, that could be 1. It's not super important. So that's one of the equations. And the other equation is just holomorphicity. So phi is a holomorphic section. OK. Again, sigma is R2. So this omega R, so this symplectic or volume form or whatever you want to call it, it's not the standard one. It's still the one I erased. maybe it's a good point to tell you what omega I'm using there. So again, the background is R2. But the geometry of R2 is the following. I can actually draw it. It embeds into the free space as a surface of rotation. And the way it looks like, it starts looking like a sphere, so starts with a positive Gauss curvature, but the end is hyperbolic. So it starts with positive curvature, but you know, as r goes, where rho goes to infinity, then kappa goes to, I think, minus 4. Again, 4 showing up is just my bad for not more normalizing well. Okay, so that's the that's where the metric still shows up, and this is how it looks like. There's explicit formulas in the paper, but it's not super important now. Okay, so seemingly I just traded one equation to another, which is still nonlinear and still a PDE, so it's not necessarily easier to solve, but in fact it is. So how does one solve it? Well, the answer is it's a Kobayashi-Hitchin type theorem that you have to prove. So, and that's, you know, for vortex equations, if you ever consider them, is fairly standard. What you look at is you pick a configuration that solves at least one of the equations, so holomorphicity. So you pick a Hermitian structure, a compatible connection, and some phi naught. So again, Hermitian structure, compatible connection, and a non-zero section on L such that at least the holomorphicity holds. And that's not very hard in two dimensions, because what you have to specify is a divisor. You have to give me a couple points, maybe with multiplicity, and there will be a holomorphic section and a holomorphic structure with a holomorphic section there. And mod complex gauge, it's even unique. So you start with that, and then you look for a solution for the other equation in the complex gauge orbit. So in other words, you write nubla as nubla h plus del minus del bar f, so for some function, and you write phi as e to the f phi naught, where f is some c infinity function on R2. So this is where actually the analysis starts. As I said, the idea of looking at SO-free invariant instantons and realizing that you get vortex equations is by now 40 years old. I think Witten was the first one in 77 to use that idea. But the problem is that if you want to solve this, you know, that equation over there, you get to this problem. And in fact, the equation that you get on f is the following. So Laplace f will be equal to 2 minus 2 times I nubla fh minus phi naught squared h over 2 e to the 2f. So I'm not even going to explain too many things in this equation. I just wanted to write it down to tell you why it's complicated, because, you know, it's Laplace f equals some function minus some other function times e to the 2f. So it's elliptic, it's an elliptic equation, but highly nonlinear. So solving this is not, you definitely should not expect an explicit solution in particular. But you know, what can be said about this? Well, this is what our theorem, the main theorem here is. The following. So if both, you know, both the curvature term for whatever connection you picked and the norm squared of phi naught are bounded, and the degree of fh, so the integral over R2 of I times fh over 2 pi is less than 2, it has to be bigger or equal to 0, then, so if that holds, then there exists a unique f, you know, solution of, let's call this star, And a little bit more is true. The degree of this nabla that you get out of this is the same you started with. Excuse me. Which again, since the background is non-compact, that's not just Stokes' theorem, right? You could do Stokes' theorem on disks in R2 and say that, well, it becomes a boundary integral, but you have to show that as the, you know, the radius goes to infinity, then the boundary term will not matter. Okay, so what we found is that, well, there's an energy bound. The degree of FH cannot be too big. And these terms have to stay bounded. But then if these hold, so if you can give me a triple that satisfies this, then you can construct a solution of the vortex equation and hence the instanton equation. And moreover, this degree doesn't change. And that's an important thing because the Young-Mills energy at the end of the day is this quantity. Okay, so maybe I say that here, that once you end up reconstructing out of nabla and phi the instanton in four dimensions, then its energy will be exactly this quantity. So first of all, it tells you that SO-free invariant instantons cannot have energy two or more at the end of the day. Okay, so, but it once more made one problem into another problem. So I have conditions on nabla H, nabla H, and phi naught, which are not trivial. So can I satisfy those conditions? And the answer is, so the conditions of the theorem imply the following. So the Hermitian structure has to look like basically the flat Hermitian structure on R2 times e to the minus e rho plus lower order terms. In this case, if you compute the degree of the corresponding churn connection. Oh yeah, so you can always just use the churn connection corresponding to the holomorphic structure and H will exactly be E. So if you put this together, you see that E will be restricted to be between 0 and 2. So that's one of the things that come out. But this, the fact that this is exactly the decay rate that the Hermitian structure has to have, this also implies that phi naught has to be either constant if E is between, strictly between, well, can be 0, but strictly less than 1, or constant or linear if E is 1, it can be 1, bigger, but strictly less than 2. But nothing else. So let me recap. We transformed the instanton equations in the case of SO spherical symmetry to vortex equations. And using this Kobayashi-Hitchin type point of view for vortex equations, we found that, well, you can get solutions exactly in the case when the data you started with has degree at most 2, and the vortex field has, well, depending on the energy, either no divisor or no divisor or a point in, you know, degree 1 divisor. But you can also, you know, say that it's all of the cases that satisfy the condition. Checking that these satisfy the conditions is easy. Showing that these are the only ones that do is kind of the harder part. But it finally tells you what the moduli space is. So I'll quickly wrap up with a picture for the moduli space. So another theorem, maybe I call it that. So SO free invariant SU2 instantons on the Euclidean Schwarzschild manifold are the following. Well, at energy zero, there's the flat guy. Energy between 0 and 1, there's a family of instantons, which correspond here to saying, well, let's pick this Hermitian structure, the corresponding Chern connection for Noble H, and just the constant holomorphic section phi, and phi naught, and you know, you'll get an instanton. But that's the only way to get an instanton. And by the way, that is the most one of the most notorious families. But at energy one, you can still play the game, the same game, just use the constant section. But all of a sudden, you have the option of using, well, either phi naught equals just constant one, or phi naught equals z minus z naught, or z naught is the divisor of the section phi naught, and but otherwise it can be anything. So this point you glue a copy of R2, looking at it as C. And after E equals 1 to E equals 2, you can just always do that. You'll always have the guys that come from the constant, and you always get a copy of R2 glued into it. And in fact, my picture is not lying. The limit of, you know, as z naught goes to infinity, will converge to the guy who's, you know, sitting here as with phi naught equals 1. One more thing. These things are all, so this arc here, oh, I have colors, good. This arc here, so the guys that come from phi naught equals constant and the guys that come from z naught equals 0 are completely isometric, so not just SO free, but SO free invariants are as well. But the guys in between are only SO free invariant. If I rotate by an SO2 element, then I'm rotating this z naught parameter. And that's it. So I shouldn't have included the point, or you know, should have been a little precise about the point that you get at E equals 2, because this guy is reducible, but everyone strictly between E, so strictly between E equals 2 and 0 and 2 are irreducibles. And of course, you want to look at all SO free invariant SU2 instantons. Then between, you know, 0 and 2, you find the irreducible ones, and they are the only irreducible ones. But of course, there's a bunch of other reducible ones which come from the solutions of the Maxwell equation, basically. So plus, you know, the energy equals 2n squared reducibles. So that's the classification theorem, that if you want an SO free invariant SU2 instanton, then there are the reducibles that were found by Charap and Duff 40 years ago, there are these blue arcs which were found by Mosna and Tavares, and but now there's two dimensions more infinitely, many more at every energy that are purely just SO free invariant, but not SO two invariant, which were found by us. And maybe a final comment is that the guy at C equals zero at energy one is the irreducible Charabdev instanton. And again, this is the only other point at E equals one that's spheric static, if you want. But the general solutions, the rest are non-static. So that's a qualitative difference from the solutions found before. All our new solutions are not static. That's which is somewhat interesting because it instantons provide you solutions to the coupled Einstein-Young-Mills problem. And it could have been a conjecture before. In fact, there were physicists who conjectured that all solutions will be static. So if you have a coupled solution of the Einstein-Young-Mills problem on the Euclidean Schwarzschild, then it should be static. But all the solutions we found are not static. So that disproves that assumption. And I think I'll just end here.
Are there more instantons at E equals 2?
Say again.
Are there more instantons at E equals 2?
Well, that's a good question. They're definitely not SO free invariant ones because that's classified. But another thing that you can look at is static solutions. So you assume, you don't assume spherical symmetry, but you assume you look at the ansatz that's SO2 invariant. And what you get there is a monopole equation. So instead of vortices, you get the monopole equation on some free manifold. In fact, the free manifold will have the form R cross S2. It's going to be actually a weird, I wrote down the equations, but it's an ongoing project. So it's going to be a metric on R cross S2 that on one hand looks like the Euclidean space at infinity, but on the other hand, it looks like the hyperbolic space at infinity. So what you have to do is describe the monopole moduli space on that space. And that potentially can give you other energy to instantons. But it is a problem that people have not looked at yet, but seems to be within reach. But I don't know. I would. So the other thing is that, I already erased that. The theorem of Etesche and Jardim tells you that if there are irreducible guys, so the energy two guy there is reducible, but if there are energy two guys that that are irreducible, then the moduli space around them is 16 minus 6, 10 dimensional. So you would expect to be a lot, actually, a rich family of those, but you have to find one first to even say that, there's a more complicated moduli there. But again, that's an ongoing project. I wish. Yeah.
No more questions. Let's thank the speaker again.